since 1775, generations of Americans have fought for our ideals and our principles. American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America. They fought to end slavery. They joined with allies to win two world wars. They have responded with valor and honor whenever called. And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world. Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen, soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun at Lexington and Concord. Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces. The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged. This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose. It is presented live and worldwide at 1041kqth.com. To engage, call 520-751-1041. The American Warrior is on the air.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, folks. I'm your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. The mission of American Warrior Radio is to educate and inform. We do so by sharing the stories of warriors who protect us abroad and sheepdogs who protect us on the home front. Today, we have a guest who hits on all three points. He is a warrior, having spent time as an Air Force pararescueman and a number of years also as a special agent with the CIA. Now, he's a sheepdog, working to rescue the most vulnerable right here in our country and our cities in our very own backyards. And as far as educating goes, our subject today is one which I would be willing to bet most of you are only vaguely familiar with, if you know about it at all. Or perhaps worst of all, you are aware of the problem and have turned away. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. On January 1, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, which declared that all persons held as slaves are and henceforth shall be free. It would be another 2 years before Congress would ratify the 13th Amendment to our Constitution. It reads, "Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist in the United States, or any place subject to the jurisdiction." It also reads, "Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation." Why is it then that today, in the United States of America, people are being bought and sold, beaten, starved, and forced to work as prostitutes or other types of forced labor? Our guest today is featured on a Vice Channel show that examines real-life persons in the context of the Tom Clancy character Jack Ryan. He's an excellent example of repurposing the skills gained by warriors and sheepdogs into a new missions essential organization. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Nick McKinley.
Well, thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Well, that was kind of a long introduction, but I just had to preach because I got to tell you, I have got a passion for what you're doing now. But let's start with a little bit about, before we get to the Deliver Fund, Nick, let's talk a little bit about you. It's important to build a character's narrative. 10 years as a PJ, Nick. What led a boy from, I think it's Montana, to join
Montana.
The Air Force and join the PJs?
Yeah, so, you know, growing up in Montana is a pretty great place to grow up as long as you're into the outdoors. If you're not, you're going to be real bored.
Sure.
I spent, you know, growing up in Montana, spent my time on the ski hills and in Boy Scouts and became an Eagle Scout and ended up kind of figuring out how to get my way onto the local ski patrol at the local mountain and really just liked the concept of rescue. But I never heard of pararescue. I mean, I think pararescue is about the worst special operations unit there is at marketing itself. And had never heard of it and actually thought I was going to join the Navy and go be a SEAL. And then that was primarily because of Hollywood, right? So I'd seen the Navy SEAL movies. I was like, that's cool. I want to go do that. You know, who doesn't want to be Charlie Sheen in the Navy SEAL movies? So I decided that was what I was going to go do. And when I was at the Navy recruiting office, there was a SEAL there, a retired SEAL, who still lives in my hometown. And I said, you know, I wanted to be a medic in the SEAL teams. And the guy looked at me and said, well, why wouldn't you just be a PJ? Hmm. And I said, a what? I have no idea what that is. And so he was like, go talk to the Air Force recruiter. So I went and talked to the Air Force recruiter. He showed me, you know, the cool recruiting video, which, knowing what I know now, really wasn't that cool, but it piqued my interest. I went home and told my parents, and my parents were still not real happy about the whole military thing, but they were supportive. because that's what I wanted to do. And so my mom, being the good mom that she is, went out and found information about the Air Force pararescue teams, and I signed up, and the rest is history.
Well, I tell you, Nick, it's interesting to me. I'm very familiar with the PJs. I interact with them quite a bit, and we've had them on American Warrior Radio before. But their motto is, these things we do that others may live. And I want our listeners to remember that, because in many ways, Nick, I feel you're still doing that now in your latest iteration as a civilian. But again, before we get to that, let's talk about your transition. I heard an interview with you where you told a very interesting story. You were out in the field somewhere, probably classified, and there was some other, as a joint special operations team, and there was these other guys that you weren't quite sure who they were, but you liked what they did.
Yeah, so I was actually in southern Turkey. You can, draw some geographic proximity and try to figure out, what our area of operations was. But I was in southern Turkey right after September 11th, and there was a JSOC unit there with us that we were coordinating with. But there was also these guys who were, kind of held in reverence by the JSOC guys, who obviously we held in reverence. And so we were asking who they were, and I found out later, after I had actually joined the agency, that they were actually JSOC guys that were detailed to the agency and then detailed back to JSOC, which was strange. But, they were out there in one and two man, three man teams doing, some pretty sneaky stuff. And I thought, wow, that seems like kind of the next frontier, cause as a pararescueman, if you're going to work, it's because something went wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's great work. And that is really, really exciting stuff. But there's also a lot of really exciting stuff to do on the prevention side. And that was a lot of what they were doing, was they were going out and liaising and developing relationships and prepping the battlefield, so to speak, to make sure that when things went loud, Americans and American interests were protected to the extent possible. And that risk to Americans and American interests was mitigated to the extent possible. And it was kind of, it almost seemed like they were playing a chess game. And most people who know me will tell you I'm a nerd at heart. And so that really, really resonated with me. And I thought, I want to go try that. So I immediately decided I was going to join the CIA, and I did.
Well, now, Nick, you don't just walk down the street and see a agency seal on the door and walk in and say, I want to join, right? I mean, it's not quite that straightforward, is it?
No, it's not.
Okay.
In fact, the recruiting and selection, if you will, process at the CIA is one of their most heavily guarded secrets. Because obviously, if everybody knew what it was, it would be easy to prep for that very, very long, very arduous process. And it was basically the opposite of what I went through in pararescue selection. Obviously, when you're selecting to be a PJ, there's a high, high level of ability to think on your feet that's needed. Everybody always thinks that special operations selection processes are all about athletics. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, the athletic standards are insanely high, higher than most professional athletes have to deal with, because you're dealing with very high physical standards 24/7, 365. There is no on season and off season. There is no ability to peak for a race. You've got to be able to perform at a high level under pressure at all times, but you also have to be able to think. Well, this is different, because the agency, with the exception of my unit and one other unit, the agency doesn't really select for physical prowess. They select for mental flexibility and the ability to make the best wrong decision, I guess, that's really the best way I can put it. When you take these tests, and I can't get into what the tests are, but every person who's ever taken the test walks away from those tests going, well, I failed. I have got to be the dumbest person on the planet.
But what I hear you saying, though,
difficult.
Very often in that role, you'd be faced with a bunch of decisions, none of which are good decisions. You don't have any nice options, and you've got to be smart enough to choose of all these bad options, which is the least bad, maybe.
Exactly. It's picking the best wrong answer.
Okay.
Or picking the best bad option. And that was, you know, in pararescue, it was a little different. I mean, there many of the situations were very black and white. You know, when you look at the medicine is very, you know, do this, do not do that. If you're free falling out of an airplane, you either show up on the ground alive or dead, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, many of the circumstances become very binary and they're very fast. As an example, if you jump out of an airplane and you have a problem with your parachute, well, you've got until you hit the ground to fix it. Versus within the CIA, many of the problems might be 2, 3, 6 months, 8 months worth of, you know, piling decisions that ultimately will then let you know whether or not you solve the problem in the best way.
Nick,
it's really a long-term chess game.
I tell you, hold that thought, Nick. I want to talk more about that when we come back. This is your host, folks, Ben Bueller Garcia here on American Warrior Radio. We're joined by Nick McKinley, who is the founder and CEO of the Deliver Fund. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
We're back here on American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Nick McKinley. Nick started his career as a warrior in the Air Force Pararescue, the PJs as we call them. Nick, I was kind of joking on the break with you that I've asked around with some other PJs and none of them had ever heard of you, or at least maybe they just denied hearing about you because you were working the, and I'm using the quotation fingers, agency.
Yeah, you know, I kept a pretty low profile as a PJ. I never was wasn't really a big partier, wasn't really the guy who, you know, who was at the barbecues and things like that. I was usually, you know, in my room with a book on deployments. I kept a pretty low profile and still do. You know, there's lots of people who go to reunions and things like that, and that's great for the people that resonates with, but that's just not really my personality.
Well, I'm betting we've probably got a few friends in common, but along those lines, let me follow up on that. The way I was introduced to you was, huge fan of Tom Clancy. In fact, my producer here goes by the name Vasily. If that maybe rings a bell with some folks, I was excited about the Jack Ryan series. I got to tell you, honestly, Nick, I think it was maybe the second episode where a bunch of bad guys with AKs overtook a compound and they could shoot between their legs backwards and knock off a special forces guy. There was a 50 caliber there that couldn't seem to penetrate a little Toyota. I said, okay, that's enough. I'm done. I want a little more action. But you're featured by the Vice Channel with sort of an examination of folks that do things like the character Jack Ryan did. And that was, tell us a little bit more, as much as you can, Nick, about your role when you were with the CIA and what that involved in terms that civilians can understand.
Sure. So, when I was at the CIA, you know, what I can say is it was given to me by the Publication Review Board. And so what the Publication Review Board allows me to say is that I was a special agent, and which is, you know, basically a field operative, the guy who was out in the field. That was what I did, was the actual mission of the CIA on the operational side. And so I spent a lot of time in North Africa, the Middle East, and East Asia. And you can probably figure out which countries when we, especially when we say things like North Africa. But what I did was full spectrum intelligence operations. So my unit's job was to facilitate CIA operations in high threat and high risk environments. Now, that could be a high counterintelligence threat, but usually what that meant was a high physical threat. So if you're going into a war zone and you're operating in very, very small teams in a city, in a country where everybody wants to kill you because you're an American and they feel that you've invaded that country, then you better have the skills to stay off the bad guy's radar when you're picking somebody up on a street corner. Mm-hmm. And that was really what my unit specialized in.
Now, I tell you, Nick, Ben gets a dumb question every show. I'm going to make it a dumb statement. How's that?
Sure.
My advice to you as a professional in my field, don't ever read your own press, okay? I'll do that for you. So I go to the Vice channel. I'm looking at the comment section about, you know, your Jack Ryan feature, and it's just full of haters. So let's address this right now. Why would a CIA guy come out and claim to be a CIA guy? That's okay, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, everything that I said in that Vice video was cleared through the CIA's publication review board. And here's the thing, like, people gotta pick up a book and stop watching movies. right? So there are so many CIA operatives, case officers, special agents who've written books and talked about this. I mean, it's everybody from Bob Baer to I can't really think of any of the real names off the top of my head. Valerie Plame. I mean, mm-hmm. many of these people, and it's because the fact that the CIA exists is not some secret. It's not the agency. It's the Central Intelligence Agency, right? So it's not a secret that the CIA exists. It's a secret who is covertly working for the CIA right now. Mm. Well, we can't tell you that. We can't tell you what city they're in, what time they're going to be on what street corner. But the fact that they worked for the CIA and they did operations overseas, that's not exactly classified information.
Okay. We've got about 4 minutes for the next break. I tell you, Nick, one thing that really touched me, because we've had lots of warriors and sheepdogs on the show, and you know, one of the phrases I has always stuck with me is, particularly when it comes to the military, when a member of the military deploys, the whole family deploys. And there's a segment in this Vice video where you talk about that you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you didn't know anybody in your line of work who was still married. I mean, divorce was very common in your line of work. And you luckily found a new woman who was eventually going to be your bride, but you faced a decision. You had to decide, okay, which, and you're gonna say it better than I did, but what's more important to the world, that I remain in the CIA or that I become a good father? And share with us sort of your thought process at that point in your life, Nick.
Sure. So I came back from Lashkargah, Afghanistan, to find divorce papers in my inbox, basically my entire life pulled out from underneath me, and it happened while I was on deployment. And what I quickly learned is that there are dirtbag attorneys, and I use that word very specifically, who never served and who essentially their business is going after veterans and trying to take everything that they have from them. And so I learned very quickly that my status as a veteran was going to be used against me in court. My status as an operative at the CIA was going to be used against me in court. And so I very quickly had to decide what was more important. And at the end of the day, like, I'm nobody special. I'm a guy who happened to get through some really cool selection processes by the sheer grace of God. I happened to be picked up and be one of that 1% that the CIA hires. And that's great, but it's not like the war on terror was we were going to lose it if I left the agency. But you know who would lose if I didn't leave the agency and leave that lifestyle? Would be my son. So I knew that if I truly cared about being a good father and truly cared about giving my son the best chance for success, then I had to make a choice between being a spy and being a dad. And I would like to tell you that I'm such a big person that that was a really, really easy choice. It wasn't. It was incredibly hard because the agency has its problems like any other government bureaucracy. But at the end of the day, it's a cool place to work with a lot of people who are incredibly bright and mission focused. And it was a difficult decision, but it was the right decision and one I definitely don't regret.
Folks, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're joined by Nick McKinley. Nick is the CEO and founder of the Deliver Fund. Nick, I'm going to just sort of plant a seed. I want to chat in our next segment when we come back. I spent 10 years of my life volunteering with a nonprofit that worked with homeless teens and street kids. And homeless teens generally try very hard for people not to be able to recognize that they're homeless, because they're the most victimized, the homeless population. But I got to a point where I'm confident you can drop me in any city in the United States, and within 30 minutes I could find you homeless teens. Now, we don't share that information because obviously we don't want the bad guys doing it, but it's got a very special place in my heart. And when we come back, I want you to tell our listeners about the challenge that we face in America with human trafficking and what you and your comrades are doing about. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen, here on American Warrior Radio. A fascinating discussion with Nick McKinley. You might have seen Nick featured in the recent or upcoming Vice series that talks about real-life people who are similar to the Jack Ryan character that is playing right now. I think, is that Amazon, Netflix? Nick, where do I find that?
That's you can find it on Amazon Prime.
Okay, there we go. Nick, I want to spend the rest of the show talking about what you're doing now, because it's a very, very powerful issue. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're about educating and informing. And I guess, like me, you probably are astounded that so many people in the United States of America don't understand or recognize the challenge of human trafficking. You're addressing that through your organization, the Deliver Fund. Folks can find out more. Visit deliverfund.org. Give us some numbers, Nick. How bad is it here in the United States right now?
The best statistic that I like to use comes from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And what they found is in a five-year period is that there was an 846% increase in just 5 years of tips involving child sex trafficking coming into their cyber tip line. And one of the things that has happened in the United States and the Western countries predominantly is we used to see, you know, people used to think that there were prostitutes and there were pimps, and, you know, the pimp was just essentially the business manager for the prostitute. And that's kind of the view of the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. But what happened with the internet coming online and really being a storefront for illicit activity, so that it no longer had to happen on the street. And now law enforcement couldn't find it as well. So if you think about that number from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and look at, that's just child exploitation. So that's girls primarily, some boys, but girls primarily under the age of 18. So that doesn't include 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 24-year-olds who make some bad decisions and end up under the control of what we used to call a pimp, which is actually a human trafficker. And that is happening every day. And these are not folks coming over, you know, Chinese and Vietnamese women coming over in shipping containers. like the Lethal Weapon movies. No, this is American girls being trafficked in American cities by American men and being sold predominantly to American men.
I tell you, Nick, I mentioned before the break my experience with an organization. It's called Stand Up for Kids. It's all volunteer. And over time, you know, we got to know some of the street kids pretty well. There's some that, you know, they're pretty savvy. I didn't worry about them very much. But there was one instance we came across a girl who just, I mean, if I was a bad guy, if I was a wolf, she was the prototypical person I would be looking for. And we spent almost 8 hours with her making sure that we got her off the streets that night, because if we didn't, somebody else was going to, and it wouldn't have been a good situation. When I look at the group, the team that you put together for the Deliver Fund, and I look at their backgrounds, Nick, I mean, it reads like a cast out of a Charlie Sheen Navy SEAL movie. I mean, you've assembled truly an elite team of specialists to help address this problem. Tell us a little bit about how the Deliver Fund goes about doing what you do to help address the situation.
You're absolutely right about my team. I'm not good at a lot, but I have a pretty darn good eye for talent and building good teams. And we've been incredibly successful. In fact, so far, with the cases we've been involved in, we have 100% conviction rate. And most of the cases have gone to plea deals. And the reason why is because we're cyber nerds at the end of the day. This is all happening online. You know, all the advertising, the transactions, the money processing, it's all happening through the internet. So if you don't have significant capability to exploit what is happening on the internet, then you just can't get to the bottom of what's happening in the human trafficking market in a scalable way. So what we do at Deliver Fund is we use the advertisements that these traffickers are using to essentially to advertise a product to a customer. And the internet is their storefront. Well, we just trace those advertisements back because we understand how the internet works. We've got the professional training in it. And quite frankly, we're smarter than they are. Mm-hmm. Combine that with the incredible cyber tools that our partners at Shadow Dragon and Caseware have put together, we've created a methodology where law enforcement officers can track a human trafficker to an actual physical location. Or if we can't get the trafficker, we can usually get the victim to a physical location within a period of about 6 hours. Wow. And that is, it's all cyber based. Everybody likes to think that, oh, a bunch of former JSOC and CIA guys going after human traffickers, you must be kicking doors with balaclavas on and, mm-hmm. you know, ninja rolling through windows. No, actually 98% of the time, we don't even leave our keyboards. Now we do some physical surveillance when it's needed, but most of the time, if you've got the right people, the right capabilities, and the right brain power, you don't actually need to ever leave your keyboard to find out where these guys are.
Nick, one thing that disturbs, and I cannot tell you how glad I am that you and your comrades are out there doing this, but help me wrap my head around something. In the introduction, I read the 13th Amendment, and it specifically says Congress shall have the power to enforce this article and appropriate legislation, which to me means funding. But I can't find a single federal agency, I'm not as smart as you, that is doing this. Where am I wrong there?
Therein lies the rub. You're not. I mean, you're in Arizona, right?
Correct.
So in Arizona, probably within arm's reach, you've got alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Mm-hmm. Yet we have a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms that's responsible for fighting the illicit sale of what are legal commodities. We have a drug enforcement agency. 90% of drugs are actually legally sold, yet we have an entire government bureaucracy that's responsible for fighting the sale, you know, for fighting the sale of illicit drugs. Yet 100% of human slavery is illegal, and you can't point to a single government bureaucracy that has the ball.
Wow.
And that's a problem. Not only is that a priority problem for us as a country, but it's a character problem for us as a political constituency. So why is it that we are not holding our politicians accountable for the fact that we don't have a centralized brain for fighting human trafficking in the United States? What happens, and I when I was working at the CIA, I assumed that somebody was doing something about this, right? I mean, we could kill people with flying robots from 6,000 miles away. Surely somebody's going to be doing something about the human trafficking issue. Yet go ask your PJ friends whose mission is personnel recovery, ask them how many human trafficking related missions they've done. Their answer will be zero. Go ask your SEALs, go ask everybody in the special ops community, go ask your agency people, NSA, everybody, they'll all tell you none. It's the local law enforcement officer, the local sheriff's deputy, the state trooper, investigators in your attorney general's office, those are the ones that are doing the heavy lifting against human trafficking. It's a couple federal agents there helping them and a couple federal agents over here helping them, but nobody is doing a central coordination. And one of the things that we learned in the war on terror is that you have to have a centralized coordination. So we have the Counterterrorism Center and other like organizations that are sharing information with everybody who's in the fight. Well, that's essentially what we have developed at Deliver Fund. We are the centralized brain that is coordinating a sheriff's deputy in Texas with a Atlanta Police Department detective in Atlanta with a investigator at the Arizona Attorney General's office. And we are sharing that information and helping them be able to coordinate their cases against these human traffickers as they travel.
Nick, when we come back, I want you to further highlight that point by telling us the story of Samantha. Folks, if you visit deliverfund.org, you can see a little bit of video about this when we come back. We're with Nick McKinley, the founder and CEO of the Deliver Fund. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Stick around.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American warrior. And
we lit up your world. We're back, folks. It's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. I'm joined by Nick McKinley. Nick is a former Air Force pararescueman. He served our nation in the Central Intelligence Agency, and now he's put together an elite team of folks that are helping local law enforcement agencies all across the country address the scourge, and I use that word appropriately, the scourge of human trafficking in our very own backyards. Nick, if folks go to the Deliver Fund website, deliverfund.org, there's under the media, there's a video where you have the story of a young lady named Samantha. And I really like that. I'd like you just to walk us through that, because to me that takes us from the very beginning of where your organization became aware of her situation through the intelligence part of it. But then also, I think, if I'm not wrong, this is a case where you actually put boots on the ground, actually in the field, to help make sure the bad guys were brought to justice. So walk us through that, if you don't mind, Nick.
Right. The Samantha case was an interesting one. So Samantha, obviously not her real name. We don't do a lot of media with survivors because we just don't want to re-victimize them. But in this case, she really wanted to tell her story and wanted to let people know what we did for her. And Samantha was originally sold when she was 12 years old. Mm. She was sold into human trafficking. By the time she came across law enforcement's radar, she was 22. So law enforcement asked us for help. By the way, Samantha had not been moved around the country. She said at one point she was being sold to a man who was about three blocks away from her father's house. And there was nothing she could do about it.
You know, Nick, let me interrupt you there, because that's so important for people not familiar with this to understand. When we talk about slavery and human trafficking in some of these situations, particularly the young ladies and the men in some cases that are being trapped in prostitution, it doesn't mean chains. It doesn't mean a locked door in the basement. Sometimes fear is enough of a chain to keep them in that bad situation. And I'm guessing Samantha's, I mean, she's in her hometown, like you said, three blocks away from her father's house.
Yes, fear and narcotics is what they use. So specifically heroin and opiates, and it's a business case. There's a business decision for that. They use heroin because it's even though it's relatively easy to get, it's hard to prepare if you don't know what you're doing. So in many cases, you'll end up with people who are addicted, you know, victims who are addicted to heroin, but they don't actually know how to shoot themselves up. The trafficker will actually shoot them up. Mm. And what the girls tell us is that they're, and this is actually the first time I heard it was from Samantha. She said that the withdrawals were so painful that it felt like her bones were crushing from inside of her body. So if she wasn't doing what her trafficker wanted her to do, he would just withhold the heroin until she started going into withdrawals. And as she got sicker and sicker, she would finally just decide that she would do whatever he wanted. And then at a certain point, their minds just have to go to a place for survival that I think is pretty dark and most of us don't even want to think of. Mm-hmm. So law enforcement came to us and said, hey, we've got this girl. Can you help? She's being trafficked, but we don't know who the trafficker is. She didn't even know his name. And that's where we come in with our cyber ninja tools. Within a matter of hours, we were able to figure out who he was based on basic descriptions that she was giving us of what he looked like, but also tracking through her social media. He was using her social media or different accounts that he had her set up in order to keep tabs on her and what it was she was saying, because obviously a lot of these transactions are done through social media. So we were able to track through that back to who he was. She knew obviously what kind of car he drove, because that's what he used to move her around. So we were able to correlate and triangulate the different pieces of information, figure out who he was. But he was I don't want to say he was a smart guy, but he was relatively adept at keeping off of the internet and keeping a low profile. So in this case, yes, we did have to put boots on the ground. We actually had a retired Delta Force guy who works for us and a retired SWAT officer, and the two of them went out and found this guy, put him under surveillance. We figured out a pattern of life on him, and then we gave all that information to law enforcement, and they were able to kick his door, arrest him, found him with narcotics, guns, all kinds of different things that make for better charges. And that gentleman is currently serving 15 years in a federal max prison.
Bravo, Zulu, brother. Well done. So that you bring up another point that I want our listeners to hear, though. I mean, you guys aren't just a bunch of cowboys out there, you know, breaking into people's Facebook accounts. You're giving this information to local law enforcement. I'm assuming they're corroborating it at some level, and then they're going out and taking action, correct?
Yes, we are private citizens. We cannot collect evidence. We don't break into anything. These traffickers have to have these accounts open to the public because they have to be able to get the product in front of the customer. So again, we are just, look at it this way. When you go to buy something online and you decide not to buy it, what ad shows up in every single website you go to?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're using the same technologies that Google is using to sell you stuff. We're using the same technologies to follow these traffickers around the internet. We put bait out. We give them the opportunity to self-identify, is a good way to put it. And then we trace it back to who they really are. Put all of the different pieces together, but law enforcement has to verify every single thing we give them. And when law enforcement verifies it, that's evidence because they collected it. And that methodology is one of the reasons why we're sitting on top of 100% conviction rate. But no, we do not kick doors. We don't have cameras in fake sting operations and all that stuff. we're strictly cyber guys. And when it comes to hunting human traffickers, we are the world's foremost subject matter experts in it, and we are happy to prove that on demand at any time. And that kind of confidence only comes from having an incredible team of really some of the best talent in the world at hunting down bad guys. And that's what we have at the Liver Fund.
Nick, we've got about 2.5 minutes left before we have to wrap up the show. So for those other sheepdogs out there who will be hearing this program, if they want your help, how do they contact you? Do they just go to deliverfund.org and send you a message, or is there a better way to do that?
No, go to deliverfund.org. If you're law enforcement, send us a message. Send us a message from your .gov account or your law enforcement account, because we do not work with non-law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And you will no doubt have a lot of your listeners who think they want to get involved with Deliver Fund. We have a tryout and selection process. It's incredibly difficult, but obviously that's primarily because of the cyber capabilities. It's great to have boots on the ground capability for surveillance, but that's a dime a dozen. You've got to have both. You've got to have the ability to hunt down people online and the ability to do surveillance to get involved with the Liver Fund. But if anybody thinks that they've got the proper skills to be able to do that, by all means, we're always looking for talent, and we would love for people to contact us and let us know that they're interested in helping.
Nick, one thing I love about visiting your website is you guys are not shy, and I think it's your vice president that makes it very clear this is a problem that we can solve by throwing money at it. But you guys have got a great team, but you need funding.
Absolutely. You know, we've got world-class and world-changing technologies. We get them for a significant discount, but they're still incredibly expensive. And so the people, the technologies, everything costs money. And that's really our biggest ask. Don't underestimate the power of donating $10 a month.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There we go. Perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it here. Please, you can find this podcast and others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Please share it with your friends. You know, visit DeliverFund.org. Make a donation. You can get some really cool swag, by the way, if you do that. But this issue is so important. You may not see it, but it's taking place in your very own backyard, whether you're here in Arizona, up in Montana, over in Texas. This is a horrible issue, and shame on us if we don't get it fixed. And I believe that Nick and his team are the folks to do it. Again, this and other podcasts at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Like us on Facebook, American Warrior Radio. We've even got our Twitter account at Warrior Radio TUC. If you want to support our messages, visit Patreon.com, patreon.com/AmericanWarriorRadio, and you can donate. You know what? Forget that. Instead of going to Patreon this week, go to deliverfund.org and put your money there. Thank you so much. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place.